Hello, this is Paul Green, Chairman of the City Club of Chicago and WGN Political Analyst. Today at the City Club, we had Chicago Police Department Superintendent Eddie Johnson, which made his speech even more exciting, was former Superintendent Gary McCarthy, was also in the audience. Superintendent Johnson talked about the need for trust and transparency, and much work has to be done on both areas. He also said very strongly that people in the city must be heard and must be respected. But perhaps the highlight of his talk is when he talked about the gang culture that starts at birth. And for some of these people, it's either prison or death. That's the only two paths they have. And then he went about saying kids who have no education and have children usually produce kids who won't have education either. It was upbeat, but it also suggested how difficult a task he's facing. And he also said that he is going to bring back community policing big time for the city of Chicago.
Good afternoon. So I was asked over the weekend, was I nervous about coming here today? And I have to tell you all, I've been to Inglewood, Austin. This doesn't bother me at all. So thank you all for having me. So there's a lot we can talk about in a city that continues to experience so much tragic and senseless gun violence. But before we do that, I want to focus on the relationship between the police and the people of the city of Chicago. For some time now, I've been talking about trust and transparency and the need for us as a department and as a city to restore both. We've made important strides over the past few months, but it's certain that we've got a ways to go, long ways to go. Quite frankly, trust has been broken down between the residents and the police, between police and the judicial system, and between officers and CPD leadership. And when trust is clouded, transparency suffers. It requires trust in each other to share information about ongoing investigations and to get witnesses to come forward. It requires trust on the part of the police officers to be honest and open about mistakes made under pressure in the field, and about being transparent could put you at risk. It requires trust on the part of a member of the public to sit across the desk from a police supervisor and believe that supervisor when he says the police were doing their job when your son was killed in an incident involving a gun and a cop. I recently invited a mother and her brother into my office to view a video from 2013 in which her son was killed by a Chicago police officer. As painful as it was to watch it, the experience was important for her and for her brother, her son's uncle, and for me. For a few moments, we both walked in each other's shoes. I experienced her pain at the loss of her son, and she experienced the pressure and uncertainty of the police officers in the video. There was no finger pointing or blame. There was simply three people watching the same video, hoping for some resolution, and realizing that there are no clear or easy answers to our problems. The experience affirmed what I've learned over nearly 30 years of policing, which is that people want to be heard. They want their pain validated and recognized, and they want to be respected. And I think that's a very important piece of CPD moving forward. They just want to know that you hear them, understand them, and are willing to work with them. As partners, as fellow Chicagoans, as people with shared values and with the same hopes and dreams for them and their kids. When I go into the community and talk with law-abiding families, they tell me they want the police in their neighborhoods, but they want them visible, engaged, present. But over and over again, they use the words respect, and over again, they come back to the basic idea that we are all Chicagoans, we live and work together, we raise families, cope with the same struggles, and share in the same successes. And like me, these people shake their heads in despair over the incredible loss of life caused by the gun violence in our city. It makes no sense to them, and it makes no sense to us. We point to the weak gun laws in neighboring states as a factor. Today, on average, Chicago confiscates a gun every hour. 24 hours a day. Between 150 and 200 guns every week, more than 8,000 recovered last year, more than New York and LA combined. We talk about a judicial system that's broken and overwhelmed, where many violent criminals serve less than half their sentences, while many nonviolent criminals occupy prison cells for longer than they deserve or we can afford. We talk about issues like economic and racial segregation, which some people say is worse in Chicago than anywhere else in the country, and is a factor when people can't see a better life. When they can't see a better life, they can't pursue it. We talk about a gang culture that starts almost at birth for some kids and is the only life they know by the time they're 12. So by the time they're 12, their destiny is set. It's either prison or death, and I think that's something that we should think about for a moment. By the time they're 12, their destiny is set, and it's either prison or death. Somehow those kids don't hear the voices of regret from the community elders who managed to survive and escape the gang lifestyles and are now counselors and coaches and advocates. Instead, they only hear the voices of their immediate elders promising cash, cars, and the kind of brief and worthless power that comes with threat and fear. We also talk about social media and the sick and perverted culture we live in, where young people taunt each other, brag about their crimes, and dare others to confront them. Over and over again, we see the seeds of these killings sprouting on social media and exploding into violence in a matter of minutes or hours. And finally, we talk about the collapse of values and social capital in our society, where broken homes and premature parenting has shredded the fabric of the community. Teenagers with kids and no education produce more teenagers with kids with no education. The cycle continues. By the time those teenage mothers turn into grandmothers, they have the maturity and the means to be good parents, but for many of those kids, it's too late, far too late. To be a police officer in this environment can be dispiriting. When did I become a social worker? How am I supposed to fix the judicial system? What can I do about kids having kids? I can't fix the schools, or I can't get people jobs. I'm just a cop. That's when I have to remind them that you're not just a cop. You're part of something bigger, a great city, a proud history, a rich culture, and a powerful nation that has the capacity to solve any problem as long as we have the will to do it. If you're doing your job right, you are part of the community you serve and protect. You're not apart from it. Even if you live in a neighborhood halfway across the city, this is still your beat, your street, your city, and most of all, your responsibility. So I ask these police officers to go out and be more than a cop. Be a good listener, a sympathetic friend, and a thoughtful partner. Be a thinker and a doer, and hold yourself to the highest standards. I've been a police officer now for 28 years, and I've made hundreds, if not thousands, of arrests and witnessed thousands of encounters between people and police over the years. Do guys overdo it sometimes? Or make mistakes? Of course it happens. In every profession, from politics to journalism to education and to law, honest mistakes are made. But that's not the norm. What I see again and again are good guys and women trying to do a tough job in a difficult circumstance and environment. And for the most part, they do it with courage, honor, and professionalism. This weekend was no exception. Dozens of shootings, several of them fatal. Many random with no rhyme or reason. We made hundreds of arrests. I wish I could track the number of crimes we prevented, but we can't. There's just simply not a way to measure the violence that we stop. We continue to work with the community, meeting regularly with faith-based leaders and local elected officials. We're studying the patterns every day to see how crime moves and shifts in response to policing. Personally, I'm kind of an old school police officer when it comes to fighting crime. Increase police presence, outsmart them and get ahead of them and work hard. I understand the broken windows theory of crime, focusing on the little stuff to determine the serious stuff. And there's something to it, but I'm really a big believer in community policing. Put the responsible members of the community in the room with the police. Talk about the trends and identify ways to work together. Beef up the bike and foot patrols that foster positive everyday interactions with people and police. That's what we've been doing these past few months, and we'll continue to do it over the summer. I also believe in assertive crime fighting, where well-trained police are identifying known criminals and stopping them before they commit any more crimes. That's what law-abiding people say they want, and that's our job. So looking ahead, I'm always hopeful. We've made important progress over the past few months, and we are using our resources to actively chart the path forward. This weekend, we were in all the hot spots. We have a database of roughly 400 known gang members, and we're tracking their movements. We arrested 140 of them 2 weeks ago in one of the biggest anti-gang operations in Chicago history. And you'll see more targeted enforcement raids in the months ahead. We just partnered with two federal agencies to arrest 17 people on federal gun crimes, which carry more severe penalties. We continue to work with other agencies to strengthen enforcement of gun crimes because that's the key to reducing shootings. Let me say that one more time. We work with other agencies to strengthen enforcement of gun crimes because that's the key to reducing shootings. We have another 88 sergeants and 13 additional lieutenants ready to hit the street next week, giving us more supervision and leadership where it's really needed in the more violent districts. With help from the community, we've taken more than 3,500 guns off the streets this year alone, a number that far exceeds last year's rate. And I'm proud to announce today that as of this week, every Chicago police officer on the street has been trained to properly use tasers. I'm also pleased to announce that officers in the 14th and 15th districts have started to wear body cameras on patrol on every watch. Expanding the use of tasers and body cameras was a commitment the mayor made last December, and we are grateful to him and to the city council for their unwavering support in retraining our officers. We continue with the de-escalation training, because we want to help our officers learn to control even the most difficult situations without resorting to lethal force. This isn't easy. Imagine you get a call, you show up, and someone has a gun or a knife. There's a history of the people involved, but you don't know the whole history because you rushed over to help. Maybe you're a new officer to that district. Turns out you were only a few minutes away, and it's more important to get there than to take the time to review the history of that address. There are additional facts you should have, but maybe you don't have, yet you can't sit in the car while a life is at risk. So you walk into the situation, you size it up in seconds, and you take charge. And in the back of your head, a small voice is whispering, "Protect life, but don't screw it up." Now, how many of you would like to be in a situation like that once a week, let alone once in your life? For a Chicago police officer, that could happen any day, and for many, it does, all day. I want the police officer to hear a different voice in their ear telling them, "Use your best judgment, we trust you." Let me say that one more time. I want the police officers to hear a different voice in their ear saying, "Use your best judgment, we trust you. We have confidence in you." Trust and confidence help me become a good cop, and that's what will help our officers succeed. I meet constantly with our officers to let them know that I've got their backs and that I won't allow politics or public perception to cloud our judgments about their work. They need to know that if they do their jobs well, we will support them and that if they struggle, we will help them. As for the few who can't meet that standard, they need to know that it's a new day for policing, and we won't tolerate abuse or unprofessional behavior. Unprofessional behavior hurts us all. It brings us all down. Worst of all, it undermines the trust at a time when we desperately need to rebuild trust with the community. As you know, I didn't seek out this role, but when asked to serve, I accepted. I believe it's my duty to step up and lead the department, even though it's really difficult times. I owe it to my city, and I owe it to my fellow officers. I know that the rank and file is glad that one of their own was appointed, and that's been important and a needed boost to morale. I remind our men and women over and over again, when they get up and look in the mirror, what they should see is a courageous, honest, hardworking professional with the judgment, skills, and determination to succeed in one of the toughest jobs on earth. And they should remember that they are no different from the people they serve, for they too are Chicagoans. And together we should all be working towards a better and safer future. Every day, Chicago police officers put on their uniform, strap on a vest and a firearm. They kiss their partners and their kids goodbye, and they head out into a dangerous world for another shift. Every morning, moms and dads across the city make lunches, fill up backpacks, and kiss their children and partners goodbye before they head off to work. With that simple, precious, everyday expression of love, police officers and people all have the exact same thought running through their heads. Please be safe. With the bravery and dedication of the Chicago Police Department, Chicagoans should know we'll always have their backs. Thank you all.
Get these. I'm not used to the blue here. Father, there's no connection because you're speaking that we're starting the blue thing here. Just don't, that is not a. We're not that smart. Charlie Mangini, in honor of you, you have the first question. affiliation trumpeter. This is good. So, Mr. Superintendent, so what is the best part of your job?
Actually, that's a great question. I've never been asked what the best part was.
Wow.
I'm always asked, what's the worst part? So kind of throwing me for a loop. Well, you know what? There's actually a two-part answer to what's the best part. First part of that answer is the best part is when I see that the rank and file really have trust in me and that I am helping them do their job, because that's really important. Second best part is when I actually see that I'm making a difference in the communities. Because I'll tell you one real quick example of that. When I was a commander of the 6th District, I had a lady come to my office crying one day, and she's about 76 years old. And she asked, she hadn't made an appointment, but she asked could she come see me, and I told her to bring her up. And when she was crying, I'm thinking to myself, oh, man, what did we do now? You know, because you always think of the worst, right? She said, Commander, I just want to thank you, because I've been living on my block for 50 years, and this 4th of July was the first time in 6 years I could actually go out in my backyard and barbecue. And that was because we had made it a point to root out the gang members that lived on her block. But that is what makes it all worthwhile. That lady coming to my office that day to say thank you made it all worthwhile, and that's why we do what we do. So that's the best part of my job.
Okay, Mr. Superintendent, now come some of the other kind of questions. Right? Always like to start off with a little, you know, how do you do? Ted Manuel. Ted, where are you?
Right there.
Right there, isn't he? Oh, Jesus. All right, sir. If commercial vehicles are illegal on boulevards, in our parkways, and on Lakeshore Drive, why do squad cars not ticket them? Mayor Emanuel needs the revenue. Also the city of Chicago, but nothing.
Well, if that's an issue, then certainly you should let your district commanders know, because those there are ordinances that prohibit that kind of stuff. But remember, officers are chasing the radio a lot during the daytime. So sometimes you have to bring that to our attention for us to go back and get. But we will ticket them.
Okay, here, Rebecca Levin from the Leary Children's Hospital. Not a member of the City Club. However, this printing is so good that I will let it go. As a research institution, Leary Children's really appreciates how data-driven CPD has become in recent years. Can you discuss how CPD will use data to inform and evaluate its work under your leadership?
Sure. Well, you know, actually, a lot of the data that we utilize today is a direct result of Superintendent McCarthy's bringing the SSL list to CPD. So he did a lot in terms of bringing technology to the Chicago Police Department. So we use now what's called a SSL list, a strategic subject list. And that database of information has gotten really good over, I think we're in our fourth version now, and it's gotten really good in terms of telling us who will either be perpetrators of crime, gun violence, or victims of gun violence. You all have heard me say there's about 1,300 to 1,400 individuals that drive most of the violence in Chicago. So right now we're at a point where 70 to 74% of these individuals is on this list. And this list doesn't take into account your race, your gender, your ethnicity, or your geographic location. It just takes into account your history with law enforcement. So we know that this technology works, and we're always fine-tuning it to get it better. But that's basically what we're using technology for today.
Ed Tracy, City Club member, Roxbury or Rexbury Road Creative. Thank you for coming today. Can you discuss what is being done in partnership with other cities to share information and procedures?
Well, in terms of other cities, we always look at best practices because, listen, I've said from day one, CPD, we have our issues. We're not a perfect organization. So I didn't need the Department of Justice or the Mayor's Task Force to tell me we had issues in certain areas. I came up through CPD, so I know where a lot of those issues are. I don't need a learning curve to figure that out. So we are addressing those issues, and we'll get to them. But in terms of partnerships with other cities, we're reaching out to them just to, like I said, see what their best practices are. And in terms of the Department of Justice review, I'm talking to other chiefs that have been through it already to see if they can give us some insight into what to expect or best practice in terms of moving forward.
Now we break a little bit. Anytime we need a break, Mark Weiermiller is one of our breakers. His question is, and you could take your time if you want to answer it. I support the police. Should we have another 1,000 cops in Chicago now? And he's willing to pay for it. He's willing to pay for it.
Okay. Well, that's a question that comes up, almost every time that I go to community meetings. So here's the bottom line. I've been a cop for 28 years in the city of Chicago, so I know there are places within CPD internally where we can do a better job of using our resources more effectively and more efficiently. So once I get that straightened out, then we can look at if we actually need more police officers. But I want to make sure we're doing everything we can with the resources we have before we ask for anything additional.
Okay. Good answer. The mayor of Westchester, Mr. Puglia, what's your first name, Sam? Go ahead. Mayor, Village of Westchester. My two sons and two nephews are on the CPD. Pretty important. See, those are the kind of people who get their questions answered. If you only had one of each. All right. I'm sorry. As superintendent of police, what plans do you have to make sure the rank and file will have your support when it involves in situations where split-second decisions are those that turn out, in hindsight, not the best?
Okay, so listen. That's a good question. And it's one that is on the mind of every rank-and-file police officer. So here's it in a nutshell. As a police officer, I've been involved in about 4 shootings, right? But I've been involved in countless incidents where we could have used deadly force and we did not. So here's the situation in a nutshell. There's honest mistakes, and then there's intentional misconduct. Most police officers can tell the difference just like that. It's just not that big of a stretch. So when they make honest mistakes, we have to admit that we made an honest mistake, and then that's where they need me to have their backs, get them more training, get them coaching, get them mentoring. If it's intentional misconduct, and we know what intentional misconduct is, then there's just absolutely no place in CPD for that. So those individuals will be held accountable from me on down to the last probationary police officer. If those officers are 100% right when they do stuff, they don't need me to have their backs because that will cover them. But honest mistakes, I'm with them 100%. Intentional misconduct, there's just absolutely no tolerance for that.
A couple more. RF Wall, retired teacher, CPS. We'll ask the second question. Yeah, two. Well, second one. How will you build cooperation and collaboration with the new state's attorney's office? Or even with the old one?
Well, of course, the relationship between CPD and the state's attorney's office is absolute. We absolutely have to have that. So I think it's just like anything else. You just sit down, talk about what your concerns are and what direction we want to go in, and we move forward from there. I don't have any preconceived notions about how the relationship is going to be, but I can assure you we will work together. When it comes to police accountability, you all have heard me say that's one of the highest priorities on my list right now, because the relationship between the community and the police department is fractured right now. And I truly believe this. The police department is only as strong as the belief that the community has in it. So in order for us to be more effective or as effective as we can be, CPD and the state's attorney's office, we need people to believe in us. So I don't see an issue with that relationship at all.
We have several questions that are the same, so we're going to combine them. We have 4 more, sir. Angela Rudolph, Cook County Justice for Children. Where are you, Angela? All right. Chicago Police Department community relations are strained in many areas across the city. You have lauded the work of Bridging the Divide and said all cadets will participate in the program. But why not also require all in districts across the city to sit in a circle with the citizens they serve, and you, by example, by attending sessions yourself, to lead in repairing the CPD community relationships and creating a new and open dialogue? That's one of the longest questions I've ever read. Go ahead.
Okay, so you must have been sitting in my office when we were talking about this, Angela. So here's the situation with the... Say again? Certainly. So the peace circles, listen, we know that the trust is broken and it has to be, you have to start somewhere in terms of fixing it. And it's clear to me, a lot of the issue with the trust is that you have different cultures clashing with each other. When cultures don't understand each other, they tend to fear each other. And so we have to strip that down. So what I did, I think my second day, sitting in the seat, was I instructed the training academy to start what's called peace circles. So what that does is bring our new trainees, bring them out of the academy. They partnered up with Marshall High School. And what that did was that let the new police officers go to that high school and see these young black kids as people, as humans. But it also conversely went the other way. It let those young teenagers see that these police officers were human also. We got to start somewhere. So we're starting with the recruits first. But my plan is to eventually bring in the veteran officers, grizzly guys like myself, to sit down in these same peace circles to understand these communities better. because that's the only way you're going to repair this trust. They need to know who we are. We need to know who they are. So that's coming. So just give me some time. The more veteran officers will be coming in contact with that also.
Don Schellenberger from Bird and Warner. Given the fact that 95 to 97% of the shootings and killings are gang-related, is there really anything the police can do? Well, that's a layup for you. Go ahead.
Yeah. First, let me say this. The violence in Chicago is just not a police issue. It's a Chicago issue. So it doesn't just take the police department. It's going to take the police, the community, the elected officials, the clergy, the business owners. Everybody has a stake in this. And the first place that I would start, especially in the minority communities, is stressing that parents have to be parents. They got to be parents. You know, I was at a meeting not too long ago where I told them, you know, we're seeing a lot of 15, 16-year-olds out here being shooting offenders. Now, you tell me if you know any 15-year-old or 16-year-old that owns their own home or rents their own apartment. I feel like you feel like I do. The answer is no. So the point to that is those kids are taking those guns into somebody's house. You have to pay attention to that stuff. And, you know, and trust me, it's not all about arresting people. You know, we have to provide services to train people how to be better parents. And when I go to the community meetings, I tell them, if you know a parent that's struggling, then you reach out and try to mentor that parent, or you reach out to that kid and try to mentor that kid. So it takes that old saying, it takes a village. It truly does. You know, CPD can't do it. We'll never, ever arrest our way out of this situation. That's just not going to happen. So we have to provide alternative solutions to some of these individuals to get them back on the right track. And I'm just going to tell you one little nugget. So about a month ago, we started a diversion program. So when we did the big sweep where we arrested 140 individuals, some of those individuals, if they were nonviolent offenders and they met a certain criteria, we offered them outreach and services to get their lives back on the right track. So in other words, if they agreed to enter into certain programs, that arrest wouldn't go on their criminal history. So that allows them to better get back into mainstream society and do something positive with their lives. Now, does that work all the time? No. But the point of it is we have to do a better job of parenting our children and teaching them right from wrong.
Three more to go, sir. John Fritchie, Cook County Commissioner. Seattle has expanded a successful policy of picking nonviolent offenders and directing them to appropriate social services other than arresting them. Should Chicago be following suit? Follows up what you
I
just
said. I
think
we just talked about that. Another thing that we're doing is, and Superintendent McCarthy started this on his watch, we have what we call gang call-ins and custom notifications. And these are the individuals that we know are going to either be victims of gun violence or perpetrate gun violence. So we actually go to these folks' houses and offer them alternative lifestyle. We offer them services to get their lives back on track because some of them are caught between a rock and a hard place, and they're kind of crying out for something different. They just don't know where to go to get it. So we're bringing that to them. So the answer to your question is yes, we are doing that.
Now, two more questions, and we always leave with the end, you know. Now, there are tables full of very prominent lawyers. Just want to let you know that, Alderman Burke there and Sir Clifford. So you can. Sherry Runner, Chicago Urban League, speaker at the City Club. Does the code of silence exist? And if so, what will you do about it? Again, you could go.
Who was that person? You want to raise your hand?
Your car is being towed.
Okay, so. Oh, no, you're not pulling me into that one. Okay, so listen, any type of inappropriate behavior or misconduct just simply can't be tolerated. I think when people have a common goal, sometimes folks that are doing inappropriate things exploit that common goal because they know we're all here for a common purpose, and I think they use that sometimes to hide certain things that they're doing. So what I can tell you is this, is any type of inappropriate behavior just simply will not be tolerated. Right now, I have started working on a policy to make it easier for officers to report misconduct or inappropriate behavior. So that's one piece of it, because you have to get a mechanism to where they feel comfortable doing it. The second piece of that new policy is going to be if someone is found to be intentionally harassing an officer because they reported misconduct or inappropriate behavior, there's going to be a severe penalty for that, because we have to be mindful that we want officers to report misconduct or inappropriate behavior, but we don't want them to be ostracized by their colleagues. So it's two pieces of that, and I'm addressing both of them. So that just won't be tolerated.
Tempted not to ask this question, but you could. I can't even read it. Basse Alcandre from BPF, which stands for? Better Boys Foundation. Then I can understand. Okay. As we talk about accountability, transparency, and trust, how does putting a cop like Glenn Evans back on the job, even desk duty, et cetera, about all his misconducts, et cetera? You deal with it. Cowards die many times before their death. Remember that?
Okay. What I can say about that is that situation is still pending. If it's found that there's inappropriate behavior, then Glenn Evans will have to be accountable, just like I would have to be accountable. But I want to make sure we get it right. We just simply cannot mete out discipline because of public pressure or perception. We have to get it right. So I'm still in the process of talking to IPRA just to make sure we get this right. So if it's found that he needs to be disciplined, then he will be. It's as simple as that. When I say we have to be accountable, I mean that. You know, and in order to restore trust, the first part of restoring that trust is acknowledging that you have deficiencies within your organization. And I think we've already done that. So Glenn Evans will be held accountable for transgressions.
How about a round of applause? Hold on. We got four.